It's a Man Up Monday, and it's a critical, crucial Monday. What is all this?
You don't know what this is?
Oh, Smokey and the Bandit?
No, this is the Ying Yang Twins, and this is the song they play in New Orleans.
This man said Smokey and the Bandit.
During Saints games.
It sounds like Jackie Gleason's theme music when you see him. Yep, that is Smokey the Bandit.
What is this, Smokey the Bandit? Yo,
crucial, critical right Monday, here. My friends. Good morning, good morning. Triple in for Tiffany.
Hey Rob, how's it going, man?
I'm. It's amazing how I can be just slightly concerned after a Falcons victory.
Yeah.
That's certainly true.
What if you look at it the other way?
About that.
What if you look at the fact that you see what this team has and you still don't think you've gotten your best offensive performance?
Oh, that's what I'm hoping for, certainly.
I think you've seen the best. You might have seen one of the better special teams performances by this team. The defense continues to kind of they have sold out for the bend but don't break mentality on defense. Yeah. I don't think there is any other way to put it with the fact that you are okay with you can we'll give you from the goal from your own goal line to our 10-yard line. But then you're going to have to fight scrap and claw to get that last 10 yards.
Yeah, and it's situational defense as well. I mean, you know when to blitz, you know when to step up. I think our secondary is the best unit on the team, and I don't even think it's even close right now.
I honestly
do not think it's even close. The secondary is playing lights out. Those two safeties, Mike Hughes stepping up, AJ Terrell, all those guys all across the back end are the most elite group on the field. And honestly, I'm not sure they weren't the group with the most question marks coming into the season. So it's kind of crazy to look at.
It's funny because if you listen to every host on this station and every media outlet member pretty much around this league, they would have told you that the secondary was the weak link of the Falcons team. And I think they're absolutely – I think it's been proven wrong. Mike Hughes
– I don't think we were any different.
I'm not saying I was. I always thought they were going to upgrade, at least bring in somebody else in that other corner spot. Mike Hughes has played his ass off. And he hasn't just done it in it's not like he's making interceptions or – all these passes, defense. He might be the best 101 in space tackler in the league right now.
Yeah.
That's how good he's looked. I mean, Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, Alvin Kamara, and he made tackles on all those guys yesterday.
I agree with you, man. It's awesome to see him come up and run support. It's awesome to see him tackle in space. When you have a guy like that can tackle in space, it allows you to do so many different things defensively where you can blitz and kind of leave him on an island. And know that even if the ball gets out, you might not get hit for an explosive play. And that's what happened numerous times. I think that was really a lot of the game plan for Jimmy Lake yesterday. So credit to him as well for how that was designed, for sure.
All right, let's set a table a little bit. And I'm just glad Charlie Morton didn't pitch for the Falcons yesterday. That's for sure. When I saw his name as the starter yesterday, it was already 3-0 Royals. So vital doubleheader today. Braves have to win one to get in. If they get swept, or any team gets swept, the Diamondbacks get in. Mets have to win one. Braves have to win one. So you have that. Going to look back on Georgia and Alabama. I didn't give up watching the game. I'm sure a lot of people turned the game off when it was 30-7 at halftime. I go, nah, this isn't over yet. This is college football, and it's crazy.
Those people are called quitters.
Quitters, man, quitters.
No, I mean, I was having flashbacks of the blackout. A lot of people talk about the blackout in 08, and we talked about it a lot of times last week. That game was 31-0 at halftime, and that absolutely, I think it was 41-30 was the final. Yep. I think we made like one or two more first downs than Bama did in the second half. Back in 2008, 16 years ago. But, yeah, man, what an incredible just instant classic. When Georgia took the lead, I'm texting with people, Georgia friends, other people, and they're going, man, what an awesome game. And I was like, even if Bama loses this game, what an awesome game. Like, I'm watching it going, dude, this is unbelievable. The back and forth, the athletes we've seen on the field, the matchup of elite NFL caliber athletes, and then right afterwards, obviously, with the answer from Ryan Williams. But really, I think you do, and I think Bo brings up a good point. You got to take your hat off to Carson Beck, really with his back against the wall through the second half, just rises up to the occasion. The amount of fourth downs I mean, how many fourth downs did they convert in the second half?
I think it was like
endless.
5 of 5, something
Dude,
like that.
It seemed endless, and there was nothing it felt like Bama could do on fourth downs to stop them. So hats off to them in that offensive unit for sure.
Jalen Milroe looked like the best one-way player in the country last night. And I say one-way because I think Travis Hunter's the best player in the country.
Yep. Yeah.
But Jalen Milroe looked like the – he looked – I mean, he accounted for, what, 500, over 500 yards of offense?
Yeah.
I mean, he ran for 117 and – And you know, just under maybe 500, and then threw for another 374. So let's go through Carson Beck's night. You get the ball down 7-0. You drop a dime into Arian Smith, and he drops it. Absolutely drops it. I think that game would have been completely different had Arian Smith makes that catch. And then you turn around and you audible. It's now you're down 14-0, and you audible to a screen because they're bringing the house, and you're the left side of your. Of the field, which was the two receivers, they don't get it. So Carson goes to throw a screen, it's picked off. Now you're down 21-0. Then Carson Beck honestly went into a shell. He throws a couple of bad picks. The intentional grounding is not Carson Beck's fault. You know, obviously you could honestly argue that it was a bad call because they're bringing the house again. It's a bad play call. And he puts as much air underneath the ball as you can to let the receiver get there. They call the intentional grounding. But then in the second half, he comes out, Mike, as you said, with his back to the wall, and he threw for almost 500 yards in the game, and he played well.
Yeah.
And you just didn't – but the throw and the – Ryan freaking Williams has 6 catches for 177 yards and a touchdown. Hey, Georgia, you want to, like, maybe defend him? You want to? You got gash for almost 200 yards in the ground game. Georgia look unprepared for Milroe and Williams completely. And I know that they're phenomenal players and they're not easy to stop. But could you have some kind of plan?
Well, and let me push back on that a little bit. I think Kirby Smart said it best, and I think it was on College Game Day or wherever he was talking to. They're like, "Hey, what's your plan for Ryan Williams?" And he was like, "Have y'all seen Jalen Milroe?" He was like, "They have the best running back in the country that can throw the ball." Playing quarterback, he's like, I can't give anybody help to Ryan Williams. And really, that's to me, that's what it came down to. My biggest concern from a Bama perspective was the youth of the secondary going up against Carson Beck. And I thought that they would get picked apart because they run a lot more man coverage now than they ever did under Nick Saban. They put them out there and they kind of simplified the defense. And they're like, hey, our athletes are good. Go play man coverage. And they got torched in the second half in the secondary. So I think that Kirby Smart was doing a little bit of that as well. You had, I mean, some safety help over the top on Ryan Williams in the last play. He just makes a spectacular move and gets in the end zone. But
well, the way he can stop, start, and change directions.
And honestly, I'm like, man, maybe that's the youth that comes into play. I don't know. The bulkier you get, the older you get, the more you can't make moves like that. I mean, he is an absolute cheat code when it comes to some of those open field plays. But you mentioned it. Numbers off the charts. Jalen Milroe, numbers off the charts. And Carson Beck, honestly, in the end, the interception line is going to look rough, but his passing yards are off the chart as well. And I thought that I honestly thought in the second half that Georgia's passing game made a lot of strides compared to where they've been all season. All season, it seems like they found some playmakers and were able to do some good things. So I think that entire team, honestly, stepped up to the plate. I want to make sure that I say that and give Georgia credit for the second half because that is a team that it seems like recently has been a little bit lost in terms of their identity. I think they found that identity, and it's something they can build off of moving forward throughout the season.
Yeah, and Arian Smith overcame a bad first quarter to be the leading receiver. I thought he stepped up. Dylan Bell stepped up. But, I mean, you know, that all said, it's tough. But Georgia now has got a tough task because they've got – one of the tougher schedules, and Ole Miss cracked the door open for them by losing to Kentucky.
And they still got to go to Austin, though.
Yeah, well, of course, that's what I mean. They have a tough task in front of them. There, it's no walkthrough. But you know, I get back to basically you have to have a better plan. I just didn't feel like Georgia's plan was very very good. I feel like they looked unprepared on both sides of the ball. It was un-Kirby Smart like to me, and then on the other side, I thought Kalen DeBoer had a great game plan on both sides of the ball. He had his team ready to play. They looked like the better coached football team on Saturday night, and they came out playing with a sense of urgency that Georgia just quite honestly didn't come out with.
Kalen DeBoer 6-0 now against Kirby Smart, Sarkisian, and Dan Lanning. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
I thought Kirby Smart's comments after the game were were, and it's, look, I mean, I love Kirby, man. I think that he is so spot on half the time, and he gets asked all the time about that record against Alabama, and it's different. Don't get me wrong. It's different for Kirby Smart in Georgia, but his response kind of was, well, what's everybody else's record against Bama?
You know, like, what's, what do you want
like,
from
what
me?
Do you, you know, it seems like it's pretty much status quo when you look around other people, you know, in the SEC and in the country. So,
yeah,
and
I'll turn in my two national championship trophies. And okay,
he's right, too.
Georgia is a different standard, and they are. But, look, I mean, he pointed to it. Bama's got good athletes. Georgia has good athletes. That was always going to be a tough game in Tuscaloosa and Georgia. As bad as it might have looked, man, I just can't say enough. I was impressed with Georgia. I came out more impressed with both teams after this game than I was with either one of them going in.
I think the problem is I think there's some kind of weird stat where Kirby's like maybe like 45-0 or something against everybody else. And then like there's three losses or four losses and they're all against Alabama.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And look, that's a problem even though it's really not a problem.
Yeah.
Because you still have, in that span, you have two national titles. You have you have a chance to go back to the college football playoff, so it is kind of a weird bugaboo type stat that I agree with Kirby. Like, well, how's everybody else played? Because he's right.
Yeah,
well, Georgia's roster is not quite as dominant as has been in years past. It's
I don't agree. I think maybe there's a step down in experience. But I'm not going to sit here and say that their roster is not as talented.
That's what you can say. I can attach that to experience, certainly.
But it's not like Alabama's got all this experience, Rob. I mean, they've got to look at all the players they lost in the secondary alone last year. Both these teams are only returning like 13 starters.
We saw one of those guys yesterday on the field, Kool-Aid McKinstry for the New Orleans Saints. Had to get press into action, too. So
yeah, let's get back to that. Let's get back to the little Falcons.
Oh, and that man again. Had a brief imprint on the game yesterday. Thankfully, he had to leave the game. We don't wish anybody injuries, but thank God he left. The Falcon killer I'm talking about. And this other player for the Falcons, I've been waiting for him to come into his own with that raw athletic ability that he has from that small school. We'll get into all that next on this Winning Falcons Monday. Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Sir, brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. 26-24, Falcons escape yesterday without an offensive touchdown, but they got the job done nonetheless, gentlemen. And I was so happy to see Troy Andersen kind of assert himself, kind of been waiting on that. Sat out he missed the entire year last year, didn't he?
No, he played three games.
Three games.
I think maybe week two is
when
he got hurt.
Week two.
And we knew the raw athleticism coming out of Montana State, certainly. Now he's learning the game from the shoulders up and, of course, makes a big play yesterday. Outruns Chris Olave for that touchdown. I think maybe make Troy Andersen our Taysom Hill. Let's do that. He played quarterback in college. Let's do it. Let's go for it.
That's an old Montana State speed right there. Oh, you think he went to Ohio State? You think you're fast, Olave?
We don't have an update on his he aggravated that knee and had to leave the game, and JT Bertrand had to come in and sub for him. So
yeah, no, there's not an update at this point. I know that he didn't talk to us in post game, which would normally tell me that he was getting treatment, Mike. I think you can.
I think that's how it rolls. I mean, it's different with different staffs in different places, but yeah, I think that's normally probably a pretty good sign that you're talking about.
Because had he talked to us, he would have been the player of the game. Instead, we gave it to Younghoe Koo, who I don't know. All he did was go out and kick a 58-yard game winner, which probably would have been good from 60.
Yeah.
Rob, I thought that Troy Andersen played extremely well after that interception. It would seem like
kind of galvanized him.
It seemed like it sparked, like I thought it sparked aggressiveness. Like it just seemed like he all of a sudden just played with a tick faster. His hair was more on fire. I'm not saying he wasn't having a good game before that moment, but I felt like all of a sudden tackles that were being made 3 or 4 yards down the field all of a sudden started being made at the line of scrimmage or right there at it. He had an open field tackle, and I believe it was Alvin Kamara on a little swing, little outlet pass. It was just phenomenally
done. And
credit
to Matthew Judon for deflecting that. Derek Carr tried to go sidearm with it.
Yeah, it was a screen.
And it hit off of Judon's bicep, I think.
It was a screen play, and he did a great job of getting in the passing lane and getting the ball up.
Yeah, it was weird, too, because I'm watching the game, and it seems like we can't run screen play, the quick screens like that. I don't know what I think the offense line's escaping too early, or there's no misdirection or whatever it is. Seems like we can't run the quick screens, and it's always frustrating because they do a good job in New Orleans of getting the ball out. But that's one of the things you have to live with if you're going to do it as much as you do is you're going to have to deal with tip passes, and that's one of the things we haven't had when we run our screens. So it's kind of a give and take You know, I wish that when we got the ball to Bijan in the flat or Ray or whoever it is that, you know, we could get more chunk yardage. And I'm sure they're working on that and tweaking that, and that'll become a bigger part of this offense. But I'm with you. Credit to Matthew Judon. And really, and I got to say this, and you guys know me before I go any farther, credit to both of these offensive lines who were both dealing with right. multiple backups. I don't think the pressure was great on either side. I thought the Falcons guys stepped up in a big way. I thought the Saints did as well. And I thought the offensive lines actually both played relatively well last night, all things considered. So
protection was really good on Kirk Cousins, I think.
I thought so, too. Storm Norton played very, very well and showed himself to be a great option there at right tackle. I think he struggled in the run game. There's no doubt about that. But, man, in pass pro, I thought he did really well. Kirk Cousins had multiple opportunities.
Let's hear from Kirk Cousins talking about the virtues of the pass protection yesterday.
Yeah, I think so. I didn't see how many attempts we had today, but usually – you know, whenever I felt anything, it was because I was going through a progression longer. So I thought they did a good job. And there was a lot of times where it was kind of one-on-ones across the board where they're rushing five. So I was really pleased. And even the sack fumble today was really me holding on to the ball too long. Jake did a really good job. So I've been very pleased with him.
Yeah, you know, there was multiple times that I noticed this, exactly what Kirk's talking about. And you got to give your tip of the cap to their defensive staff, because I thought it was a great game plan. If you notice and you go back, just go back to when Matthew Bergeron got the hands to the face, that big penalty, that 15-yard penalty earlier in the game.
Oh, that killed the drive. You had to right. settle for a field goal.
Well, what you did is you pulled Chase Young inside into a three technique. Joe Woods, the defensive coordinator, pulls Chase Young into a three technique. He's not rushing the edge anymore. All of a sudden, he's on Matthew Bergeron and giving Matthew Bergeron fits. And the reason you do that, in particular, is like Kirk says, you leave all five guys kind of on an island. And when you do that, Ryan Neusel now has no help on either side, because those guards have three techniques over them, and they have to have their own one-on-one matchups. And I know that they were trying to attack Ryan Neusel in those situations, and you bring an edge rusher on Jake Matthews off the blitz off the edge. So I thought it was a great game plan by Joe Woods. It's just that Atlanta's offensive line played pretty well.
What's with the Neusel the penalty calls on moving the ball? I've never seen that. And the second time, he didn't do it.
I said it multiple times on the post game yesterday, Rob. I've never seen that. So there is a small trick of the trade when you are an offensive lineman and a center and you're in a short yarded situation, that when you stand over the ball, you kind of roll it, you get the laces up, and you kind of put it out in front of you, right? And you might gain, I don't know, 3-4 inches right there, just in terms of you know, grabbing the ball. I've never seen that called. As long as I've known that probably happens, and I'm not talking about you give yourself half a yard or whatever, he might have moved it forward 2 inches. And they're like, well, false start, he moved the ball forward, and that takes you out of a situation where you were going to be aggressive and go for it. So I've never seen that called. And the second time they called it, I still have no idea.
How could that affect him going forward,
about.
Though? That's
going
to be in his head, I think, Thursday.
I have no idea what they were talking about. It goes back to, this happened. You might remember this, Bo. It happened one time where Joe Holly was actually doing head bobs as a cadence on the road, and they called him for false starts. And it was like, dude, every center in the league does a freaking head bob. Well, how can you possibly call him for a false start?
I actually thought that's what they called on Neusel the first time, because I never saw him move the ball, but I saw his head turn, and he looked to Lindstrom, and his head turns, and that's what I thought that they called the first time. I don't know. I thought that officiating crew at times was just brutally bad. And look, you can say that every week, I think, in the NFL. But at one point in time, the Saints had been called for no penalties when they were as penalized as many times as us. Both of these teams were even as penalized teams. When both teams come into a game and they have a standard out of three games in, they've been penalized so many times, and they're through a half and they've been penalized no times or almost through a half, then that means it kind of questions what's going on. I did think that I thought Ryan Neusel played actually really well yesterday, and I thought he played much better yesterday than he did when he came in for Drew Dahlman against the Chiefs. Now, let me tell you something. We can sit here and talk about what the Falcons' offense hasn't been. They have not had it easy going defensively. They have played the Steelers' defense, which is the top five defense. They have played the Eagles' defense, which yesterday it didn't look very well for them, but they have been a good defense. They have played the Chiefs' defense, which is getting after the quarterback better than any other team in the league right now as far as hitting them.
Well, the Chargers only scored 10 points on them.
Yeah. And then you look at the Saints defense, who came in with the fifth best scoring defense, only allowing 14 points a game. So it's not been easy sledding. You got to remember too, they took a touchdown off the board for us, which I thought was a ticky tack call, and Jake Matthews a holding call.
Awful.
Bijan would have scored. That would have basically really put a dagger in them at one point. It made it a 10-point ball game when they weren't scoring points. But I thought the running backs, you know, Mike, you said earlier that the defensive secondary is the strength of this team, a position group. I think number two, you can make an argument, could be the running backs, because yesterday was one of those games where styles makes fights, and this is a defense that has been really good. They're eighth best rushing defense in the league coming in after three games. But it was tough sledding for Bijan. Remember, he's banged up. I thought he had a block early in the game in pass pro that was as good as it gets, and I wonder if that aggravated it. But Tyler Algier, it's a third and long, and you swing it out to him, and he puts his foot in the dirt, makes one cut, and then he starts to go, and he hits Alante Taylor. Alante Taylor was hit so hard, they had to evaluate him for a possible concussion. He did return. But he dropped Alante Taylor to his knees and got more than the first down. And all of a sudden, here comes the Tyler Algier train, which you love to see. Freaking love the way he runs most days. And then you get down there in the red area, and it's second and two, and you throw it twice, and it kills the drive. And I didn't like that play calling.
I didn't either.
But Tyler Algier was the guy you needed yesterday to step up on the offensive side, and I thought he did.
Yeah. No, and the thing is, those plays that are in the flat where you have to make somebody miss and pick up yardage, to me, guys, and we've talked so much about third down with this team, to me, those are going to be the keys to third down moving forward. If you can get the ball to Algier or Bijan or even Ray or possibly even Darnell Mooney in the flat and make a guy miss and get up the field for 8 yards – if Drake London and Kyle Pitts and everybody else are being doubled or whatever else and taking the top off the defense, those underneath routes where you have to pick up 5 or 6 yards with your legs, that's going to be the key for this offense moving forward.
All right, we're going to marinate in Falcons coverage, but coming up next, the fate of Western civilization resides on that right arm of one Spencer Swellenbach. Braves-Mets doubleheader today. Get into that next in the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 1990 Game.
You know, we feel like we got a mentally strong group here, and sure, it's not an ideal situation, but it's what we got, and it's kind of what we've, you know, said all year. We've had some injuries. Nobody cares. Nobody cares that, you know, we got to play two tomorrow, and it's just, like I said, show up and win.
Oh, Matt Olson, I care. I promise you. I care deeply. Welcome back to the Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany, Sports Radio 1990 Game. Spencer Swellenbach gets a start in game one, and this is really unfair to the Diamondbacks. Whoever wins game one, they're in. Game two, they'll trot out their AAA lineup and probably pitch a bullpen game and just try to rest their regulars as much as possible.
But you can't really rest that many guys, though. I mean, the Braves are trotting out a half of a AAA lineup as it is. So, I mean, I don't know
You just contradict yourself. They're going to rest as many as possible, certainly.
But you're going to have an extra guy today, an extra pitcher, I think, the 26th spot. But other than that, I mean, who takes over Matt Olson? Who's going to come in for him? I mean, you're going to play. You got to have both catchers play because of, you know, one will catch one game, the other will catch the other. I guess maybe Whit Merrifield could play third base. You can rest Gio Urshela. I mean,
well, he's going to be your starter, though.
But I mean, you know
he's going to be your starter third base, though.
But I know. But I'm just saying, like, it's not like
you can have three or four guys.
I could say
it's still ridiculous we got to this point, though.
Well, it's ridiculous because of how Major League Baseball let the teams dictate how they wanted to play this out with the Hurricane. But I don't think it's unfair to the Diamondbacks. Hell, if you wanted to get in, you should have won more games.
You should have won more games, certainly.
I mean,
but
I can't
as
feel
things
bad
are currently
for you.
Constant, well, I'm not going to feel that bad for them. But, you know, there's a bit of that there. But as for Spencer Swellenbach, though, just don't walk anybody.
No, listen, y'all are missing one of the main topics of this. First of all, when does the winner of game one, when do they celebrate? That's going to be the question.
Yeah, are you going to be drunk for game two?
No.
Are they going to have any time?
No, but here's the thing. Could we get the ultra rare double celebration after the doubleheader is over? And they, you know what I mean? Can we just get everybody? Can we just get all 50 players, you know, 52 players spraying champagne at the same time?
You think they hug each other
after game two? Wouldn't that be unique?
Well, let me tell you something. That would be an investigation would come out. Wait a second. The Braves won 2-1 in game one, and they lost 12-0
in
game two.
Your starting pitcher for game two, Marcelo Zuna.
That's right.
And we've seen how his arm is.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so interesting to me. And I said this yesterday in a tweet. I was like, can we just make a gentleman's agreement that whoever wins game one gets to celebrate right then and there, champagne, the whole thing, gets it
be
done.
Be hammered for game two.
And it's a gentleman's agreement. No matter what, no matter which way it goes, it's like it is what it is. And we'll just figure it out for game two. But, man, it just –
But you got to get out of there and travel, though, right away.
It's just so unique, man. It's so unique to see how this all kind of comes together and fits. And what a massive, massive day of baseball down at Truist Park. And I'll be curious to see what the crowd is like with the early game. You know what I mean? I mean, it's obviously a big day. And, look, man, I say we all just clock out of here about 9 o'clock and head on down there. What do y'all think, man? Going on down to the Battery.
I'm down.
Yeah. I think I read that, and I'm pretty positive I'm going to give this exactly the way I read it, but if the Braves win, they will go to San Diego tomorrow night.
Yep.
And so, you know, you not only do you have to play a doubleheader today.
You got to fly across the country.
But then you got to get on a West Coast trip. And
but it's not like they're flying on a C-130 troop transport. Well, you know, they fly in luxury, but still, that's a thing.
You
gotta hydrate, though. You gotta hydrate on the plane.
And I know that MLB flights are different than NFL flights because of the amount of people, and their charters are completely set up different. But, dude, I don't want to hear that. You don't fly commercial. You're still flying on a regular ass plane. You're still gonna play two baseball games, in one day, and then
fly
across the country, and then get crap sleep, and then wake up the next day and have to play a playoff game. That is not easy for anyone.
I don't know if you've read this too, but if the games are split today, New York just flies right back to Milwaukee. Like, they just finished their series in Milwaukee. If they split today, they'll fly right back to Milwaukee.
Yeah, and that's...
Well, you shouldn't have lost to the White Sox, Braves.
I agree.
The Mets are 1-5 against Milwaukee this year. So, I mean, yeah, if you wanted to handle that
situation,
you could have done that.
Milwaukee's my dark horse team, though, for the World Series, if you ask me.
But they got good pitching, too. Their pitching is very good.
That's a feisty team.
But I think, look, you know, let's before we get back to Falcons, let's put a bow on this. The reality is you want to win game one, Rob, as you know, because you want Chris Sale locked in to start game two. And then, if I'm not mistaken, Max Fried would be able to start game one, and then Fried would be able to start game two.
Man, if you win game one, I put Chris Sale on a plane right away. Borrow Arthur Blank's plane, get him out there, let him get some sleep.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Get a 5-hour jump on everybody. I'd get his ass out there.
Does anybody have a plane with a bed? A king size bed?
Yes.
Just throw this man in there with
it's
anything.
It's a melatonin.
He needs. A couple sleep masks, maybe an oxygen tank in there.
Big tank for Spencer Swellenbach. Trust your stuff. Don't walk anybody.
Yes. Rob, I do have to apologize to people. Yesterday, I'm doing the postgame show, and I'm like, you know, GoForth going through the NFL scores. And I was like, GoForth, I got to tell everybody the Braves are down 4-2. You know, I want to make sure all the Braves fans are updated. And I immediately get like 5 tweets from people that are like, dude, you just said the score backwards. So somehow in there I said, hey, the Braves are up 4-2, well, and people were not happy about it. I was like, that is on me.
Dude, what's wrong with you?
It's a man up Monday.
And that's exactly what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to exercise the demons before the Braves take the field today. Hopefully I can take care of that.
Well, Falcons exercised a demon or two yesterday, I do believe. Getting that victory, certainly 26-24. Now the Falcons lead the all-time series 56-55. The last time the Saints had a lead in this series, they were up 1-0 in 1967.
That's crazy, ain't it?
Yep.
It's funny because we play the first half, and you know, our broadcast booth is right next to the Saints radio broadcast booth. And, you know, you over time you get to know some of their guys. And I do their hit every week, or every time we play them with Bobby on their pregame, Bobby Hebert. And Deuce McAllister's over there. And Deuce obviously played for the Saints, and he's a really good dude. And we come out at the same time, and we look at each other, and I go, you know, said some choice words, and he goes, I know. I said, I feel like you dominated us. And he's like, yeah, we're giving away points. Falcons have lost games in this series just like they won yesterday.
Yep. They've lost many games like this that they won yesterday.
And it's just weird because I felt like we played pretty good against the Chiefs. offensively and defensively. I thought for the most part we played pretty good. I know we came up short, but I thought we played pretty good because I think the Chiefs are a really good team, especially on the defensive end. Yesterday, it just didn't feel like we played our best, but we won. And there, I just feel like you can't overlook when you don't play your best and you still find a way to win.
Yeah, and it's funny, man. You talk about kind of the inner workings of the booth. On the flip side, I'm sitting here with Goforth watching the end of this game, and it seems like the Falcons are doing almost everything they can to lose the game at the end. And it is such a challenge to me. Me and Goforth talk about this every week. It's such a challenge to me to 5 minutes after these games are over to get on here and try to give people my emotions and my feelings because right. I'm so frustrated. And in the moment, it's almost hard to remember that the Falcons won because I'm so frustrated with how they played down the stretch. It's like, thank God for the pass interference at the end because the offense was absolutely anemic towards the towards the end run. The defense does everything to get you the ball back and get stops, and you go three and out with three of the worst plays that we've seen, and you give the ball right back to them with 3 minutes left. I mean, it's just it's so frustrating to watch. And I have to give so much credit to Clint Kubiak, man. I think he's special as the OC for them, and watching the imagination that he brings to the table with some of the eye candy that New Orleans uses.
What did the Falcons do differently in the second half? First half, 109 yards rushing by the Saints. Second half, they had minus 3 yards heading into the fourth quarter. What was the difference?
I think it was situational. Obviously, when you go to what's, and Taysom Hill had to leave the game. I think that was huge in the fourth quarter. I just think that, you start devoting it to the run. When you start getting banged up like that against the run of the first half, then this defensive staff is going to say, hey, we ain't doing that anymore. Start blitzing up the middle a little bit more, too.
They also did a good job in the first half of letting Derek – we were giving him such cushion in the secondary. Derek Carr was getting 5-7 yard completions, taking out the underneath stuff, and then it was easy for them to run at you a little bit at will. I thought you just won – you were better on first down defensively in that second half than you were in the first half.
I'm going to talk to former Falcon David Archer coming up at 8:20. Get more into the Falcons coming up. And I've got more questions about that, especially that final drive after the 32-yard pass interference penalty. The choice of play calling there. I'm going to ask our resident former offensive lineman about that one. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Hire Morgan & Morgan. It's the morning shift. Sports. Welcome back to the Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart. Lasting clean. Falcons 26, Saints 24. Tampa Bay coming in Thursday night. Kirk Cousins spoke with our David Archer after yesterday's victory.
Kirk, you and I had a chance to talk during the week getting ready for this game that divisional games, there's just something a little bit different about them. You played in a bunch of them when you're in Washington and in Minnesota. Now you're a part of this rivalry. Your first thoughts of the way this went down?
I love the energy in the stadium. I love our fan base. I love the nest. We were backed up at a series in the fourth quarter, and during the TV timeout, the stadium was just rocking, and I kind of just took it in for a second and just appreciated the atmosphere that was there. So it was a great day and a great chance to win and really give our fans something to be excited about.
Can you describe the energy that all three phases were kind of feeding off one another? You got the turnover early for this touchdown, then Troy makes his play.
Yeah, a special teams touchdown, a defensive touchdown, huge, huge blessings to our offense to get that help. And then Ku's kick at the end was a huge special teams lift for us. It was complimentary football all game long, and that's how you win in this league. And I kind of have this like bittersweet feeling right now. You love to win, and that trumps everything. But certainly felt like offensively could have played a little better.
Really good defensive unit you faced today. So it was a kind of punch counterpunch. It felt like didn't get a run game going early. Looked like you were operating really well in the pass game. Then all of a sudden the run game started to click for you a little bit.
Yeah, I thought Tyler ran the football really well today, and not only ran it well, but I thought after the catch too, made a huge third down conversion. We moved the football, and then drives would stall kind of in the high red zone area for whatever reason, penalties or just not converting third downs. And so kicked a lot of field goals today. And then, the penalties were tough for us at times. They really hurt us in some drives and took away a touchdown. And so we left a little bit out there.
It's cool to see the ongoing chemistry that continues to build. You and Darnell Mooney, and Drake London, you got those two in particular. Ray made a couple of really nice plays for you. The one where you got out of the pocket and he laid out to make a play. Tell me about that.
It was a great play by Ray. I agree that I have to continue to learn from each game to anticipate better to these receivers. I thought one of our first third downs of the game was a third and long. Drake, it was tight coverage when I let the ball go, but I just feel like,
at his size with his strong hands, I got to throw that football, and he's got to go get it, and that's how it's got to get done. And it was. And I thought, okay, that's the things where we're learning, and I'm trusting him, and he proved me right. And so there's still others, though, that you look back and you say, you know what, I got to anticipate differently or better or whatever it may be. And that's the stuff we'll have to talk about coming out of this one.
Leadership always has to be a part of things, but maybe even more so in a week like you've got coming up with a short week, another divisional opponent. Tell me about that.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for us after the hole we've dug ourselves starting 1-2 to be able to play two NFC South opponents and on Thursday night have a chance to get back above 500, you know, at home, primetime game. It's a short week, but we can benefit from that. We can get a lot done in the walkthroughs and the jogthroughs, and we got a chance to really take a step forward here in our season on Thursday night, and our preparation the next few days needs to reflect that.
Congratulations on the W.
All right, thanks, Arsh.
All right, it's Kirk Cousins. More importantly, though, there's this cultural phenomenon that Kirk Cousins looks with childlike wonder about. He was asked about this certain cultural phenomenon.
I loved it. It was the fourth quarter. We were a little bit backed up, and it was a TV timeout. And they were playing that song about you swag and surf, and the whole stadium was moving. And I looked around. I was like, this is pretty sweet. And the nest especially, I love the nest. The nest may be my favorite thing about being a Falcon. That's awesome, the energy they bring. So, you felt it today. And we need to win and play at a level that'll keep it that way all year long and into January. But I can't say enough about the environment today and the way our fans showed up. I was really, really pleased with the atmosphere we got to play in. It was a privilege.
Sounds like such a dad.
I know. It was a privilege to play in the atmosphere. And shout out to the Nest. The Nest. My good people in the Nest, man. And I think he brings up such a good point.
That is
such
swag cool. And surf.
Yeah. That's such a cool atmosphere over sweet. In the corner in the Nest, man. Gotta tip your hat to the group of people over there that really bring that fire every freaking game.
Good Lord. Speaking of fire, did you see all the fights in the 300 section yesterday?
All over the stadium. Man. All over the stadium, man. And it's
funny
rough
because
to watch.
In a 30-minute span, I would say, I got texts from different group chats with different fights. And I was like, damn, they really were. And it really didn't feel like there was many Saints fans there as I've seen in the past. And maybe I just got into the game and just kind of drowned some of it out. But I felt like the crowd was pretty, that was a good crowd for Falcons fans. Still,
well, it was Falcon on Falcon crime, though. I mean, Falcon fans fighting amongst themselves.
Some of it was Falcon Saints fans.
Some
as
of it
well.
Definitely was. Yeah. It's unfortunate to watch, man. This has started happening more in college stadiums, too, with the introduction of more booze in college stadiums. And that's exactly what it is. It's booze-filled, but, can't highlight that, unfortunately, because it just happens all too often. It just stinks watching it on the videos.
Well, one gigantic dude, this looked like attempted murder. This small guy, he clearly had won the fight, and then he started stomping his head, and that guy's body looked basically lifeless. I don't know what the result of that
guy
was.
Should be locked up. Absolutely. He should go to jail, and there should there should be something, because that is,
saw that one, right?
Yeah, that's taking it way too far. I think the one thing that you've kind of seen about this team is they have each week it's a different guy stepping up, and that's the depth that really you see, because like yesterday on the defensive side, Troy Anderson steps up, right? Because they're running the ball down, and all of a sudden he gets an interception, Rob, and you described it earlier. It's a screen pass. Judon gets in the passing lane and is able to get an arm on it, and the ball goes in the air, and then you got that Montana State quarterback speed, and he's down. But
make him a Taysom Hill for the Falcons, man. Why not? Let's do it.
Well, if he wants, I would say make him our version of Travis Hunter, where we have him playing like a running back style and linebacker,
right?
But not a DB wide receiver.
But he's got to stay healthy, though.
He does, but that you look, you, there's no such thing as healthy once you get past week one in the NFL.
At least I'll be able to play, though.
And I think he will. But I felt like his aggression completely went to a different level once he got once that interception had. And then I thought Tyler Algier had the play where he woke up, which was the little dump off outlet, and it's a third and I think 10. There's no, it's a give up. You're just dropping it off because you're like, hey, want to be safe with the ball. And then when he runs over Alante Taylor, then he ends up getting the first down. All of a sudden, it was Tyler Algier time. And it just kind of unlocked him for the game.
Should he be getting more carries?
I think it's easy to say he should be getting more carries.
Yeah, I don't want to be too simplistic about it, but it seems like, you want to go with a hot hand, but also, there's other I get it, but.
But where are you going where he gets more carries? Because you've been limited in your possessions. Right. You're not getting as many plays. You've been brutally bad on third down. And
that's
honestly, it wasn't any better yesterday. Third downs weren't much better yesterday. They were better, but not good. They were 4 of 11 yesterday on third down for 36%. That's bad that you have been really bad on third down, which means you're not continuing to possess the ball. So I don't know who you're taking. You know, you're just not going to run the wishbone. And I thought yesterday was the perfect time for Algier to have a big game. And I love Tyler Algier. But it was the perfect time for him to have that game because guess what? Bijan's a little banged up.
Yep.
When he was on the injury report, he was a lot more effective in the passing game, Bijan was yesterday, than the run game. And Algier just started taking off, and it was a physical running game where you needed his style.
I'm telling you, that sense of doom, you know, remember when the Falcons stopped the Saints on fourth down late in the game, you get the ball back, about 4 minutes left, ideal part where you can just run out the clock, but apparently they just stuffed the run for whatever reason, and that's what you want to do, and you sadly go three and out.
Yeah, I think that was, I said to Arch before that drive, I said, I need 25 to eat here, and he goes, that's great. He goes, but you know they know that too.
Yeah,
and you can bet you that they're gonna load up. He goes, so whatever you do on first down, you have to have success. And guess what they didn't do?
Have success on first down.
Success on first down. Now you're throwing. They only had to burn one timeout. So it was, and then Algier made an actual crucial mistake because he catches the outlet on third down, and he gets out of bounds. He goes out of bounds.
Yeah.
So the clock continues to run.
That's right.
So that's one of the situations where, as good as Algier was yesterday, you've got to have situational awareness.
Yeah, a little mental error there. I think the most disheartening thing was, Bijan Robinson touchdown, the holding on Jake Matthews, and then after that you give up a sack and a fumble. Thankfully, that was covered by Bergeron. But you lost 21 yards because of that penalty in the sack after the touchdown was called back.
And I thought it was a crap call.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think they called that call against them in that particular way.
It didn't look particularly egregious at all either. I mean, there were many holdings that were – there was one play in particular where I think one of the Falcon offensive line was basically tackled, and that wasn't called.
Yeah, well, and Judon got tackled a few times yesterday.
Yeah.
It was behind the play. I'll say this, though.
That's what I meant, the other side of the ball. Yeah, yeah.
Drake, it is third down, to your point, and Kirk Cousins makes a – pretty ballsy throw to Drake London on the sideline right in front of us, and he let it go before Drake, I think, came out of his break, and you get enough back to be able to, you know, get back in field goal range, right, kick the field goal, and you did get points, though.
All right, coming up next, an instant classic in Tuscaloosa, Georgia, Alabama. I'm going to get into that next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 99 Game.
You know, you have to tip your cap to Mike Bobo, Carson Beck, and as much as any of them struggled in the first half, they played that well in the second half in crunch time. So the whole finish was absolutely unbelievable. I would have said the same thing. It was one of the games of the century, an incredible finish, even before the Ryan Williams play. And then you see that, and you're like, dude, that's unbelievable. I think Kirk Herbstreit actually, right after Fowler's call right there, goes, unbelievable.
What, four turnovers, you give up a safety, and you still take the lead late with a chance to win it. What was that thing you showed me online? It's hilarious. What is it, like a little baby deer running around?
It was a baby deer
with
in a backyard. It said Ryan Williams versus man press. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in high school right now. He's supposed to be playing in a high school football game last Friday.
So theoretically, if he decides to go pro after his third year, he'll be a 19-year-old NFL player.
Yeah. Yeah, Kyle Pitts was very young when he first stepped on in the NFL as well. I think Pitts was 20.
He wouldn't be 19 in the NFL. He'd be 20 in his rookie year, but he would be 19 through the whole draft process,
right,
Senior Bowl combine,
right,
and everything else. He'd be 19 through that. That's insane.
I thought Georgia's defense was as bad as I've seen them in a long time. I mean, they looked awful. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't get enough pressure on Jalen Milroe to do anything. They looked like they didn't have a plan for them. And I know that it's easy to say, well, how do you not have any kind of plan? They're two of the better players in the country is Ryan Williams and Jalen Milroe. But you got to figure out a way to maybe take away one of them. Like maybe try to lock down and make Jalen Milroe run around and maybe say, hey, you know, you're gonna beat me with your feet. Or, you know what, I'm not going to let you out of the pocket, and you're just going to have to beat me with your arm.
Yeah.
But they didn't do either one. Yeah. Jalen Milroe had over right at what 500 yards of offense.
Yeah, he did. And you know what's funny? I asked you guys in Fair Foul if the winning quarterback of this game would be the Heisman favorite. And I don't know that he's like the runaway Heisman favorite, but Jalen Milroe in a lot of circles has kind of jumped to the lead on that one. BetMGM and whoever else it is.
Did you say would or should? Because I thought you said should.
No, it was would. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was wood. I can look back at it right now. But, I mean, it's neither here nor there. I think it goes to show you. But I don't know. I kind of feel differently than you do about Georgia's defense. I think they struggled in the secondary. I was actually really impressed with the way they controlled the line of scrimmage in terms of interior runs. There was not many yards to be had on interior runs, and that's one of the things that I thought Jalen Milroe would have a great time at. Some of the gap schemes, powers, counters, and things with the interior runs, they shut that down. And then they widened out and played better contain after the first couple of touchdowns. They played better contain on Jalen Milroe and strung out some of those plays. And really, Milroe was kind of shut down running towards the end, had to use his arm to make some of those plays in the second half.
Yeah, well, when you tally it all up, he was getting 7 yards a clip. And he busted off a big one. It was down the sideline, wasn't it? I think that was a 36-yarder for the touchdown. I just thought Jalen Milroe played phenomenally. He looked like the best one-way player in college football Saturday night.
Yeah.
Because I think the best two-way player is the best player overall, really, to me, is Travis Hunter.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and it'll be interesting.
He struck a Heisman pose on that interception against Central Florida.
He deserves it. Might be a little bit early, but that's another impressive team we probably need to get into as the week goes on, because I thought they looked as good as they've looked since Deion's been there. So hats off to them.
Colorado might have looked as good as they looked since Cordell Stewart was there.
I'm very grateful for that we've said that, I don't know, a week ago. You know, we just had to win, and we've done a good job of going out every day and trying to go 1-0, and you know, we're coming off a really big high last night, but that's baseball. It's the way it is. And you know what? We'll start it out fresh tomorrow with, like I say, it's two of our better guys going. So that's about as good as I can feel. I mean, with Schwelle going the first one and then Sale too. And you know what? It's balls in our court. I'm very.
He's what? He's buried.
What? You got to go 1-1 today, Stitt. Got to go 1-1. Welcome back. Morning Shift, Triple in for Tiffany. Going to get to mic'd up in a moment. 1-10, first game today, Braves-Mets. Spencer Schwellenbach on the mound for the Braves.
Against Tyler McGill,
yep.
Who in his one appearance this year against the Braves, gave up 3 home runs in 6 innings. So he's pitched. The Braves have faced him a lot. They've been good against him. This guy he got about 8 pitches, but he really relies on his four seam. So
it's such an interesting dynamic, man. I don't know, and you guys probably know Braves history as well as anybody in this town. I can't remember any situation as unique as this one in terms of games you have to win, but also games you have to play because of the seeding and everything else, and games that might not matter, and then the pitching staff that will be absolutely put up against the wall for the next couple of days.
Rob, was it 92 or 91? I think it was 92, where the Braves are playing and the Giants are playing at the same time. The Braves game finishes and they watch the Giants.
That was 91. That was the first time they'd won the division since 82. And I remember I was in a bar.
Yeah,
watching it.
I was
in a famous pub in Toco Hills.
That a boy. Of course you were in a bar.
Let's go.
But yeah, that. So Mike, to your question or your statement, that's one that I remember being just wild because Rob, you can give a lot more insight on it because you remember a lot more vividly than I do. But that was one where you literally finished the game, and you had no clue what your fate was, and you had to turn because there were no wild cards back then, y'all.
Yeah.
It was basically 2 divisions. You win your division, you play in the LCS.
And hoping and praying the Giants beat the Dodgers. That was the same year Daryl Strawberry said, "We don't care about Atlanta."
Well, Daryl, there's lots of things Daryl Strawberry didn't care about, and some he should have cared about.
So you'll get Schwellenbach today. And possibly Chris Sale tonight. And then if you have to face the Padres for the next 3 days, it is such a bonus for Fernando Lopez kind of back in the fold and everything that
pitched
brings
well
to the table.
Too.
Yeah, and pitched well.
I told you he was coming.
Yeah, we haven't. Well, we'll get to this later, but I got to give you credit for the Matthew Hennessy call. I thought there was no way they were going to activate Matthew Hennessy coming straight off the street into game action. But yet, there we were yesterday, and Chris Goforth in the pregame goes, Matt Hennessy's active. And I'm like, dude, what?
Chris,
like, what?
I know when Chris said that, Mike was like, I'm going to hear about this.
I said it on air. I said, it's absolutely shocking to me that Matthew Hennessy comes off the street and beats out everybody that was in training camp and everything else to be active as part of this roster. Anyways,
By the way, very quickly, though, if the Braves do win one of the games today and get to the playoffs, game one against the Padres, 8:35 tomorrow, and you're going to fly across the country, then get ready to play a ball game.
And I want to say this. There's only like 40 to 45 minutes between game one and game two today. So whatever happens, it's going to be a quick turnaround, and if we lose game one, I say we, the Braves, you guys better buckle up with your TVs.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to watch. I got a unique question for those of y'all out there, though, on a unique week of Atlanta sports. Let's hit it. Yeah, it's an interesting week and really a massive weekend that was Atlanta sports. When you look at an incredible game Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, you look at the Falcons against the Saints yesterday and another barn burner in a game that was won, you know, just defensively and gritty and everything else. And the Falcons offense, though, comes up a little bit short of expectations once again. And then over the weekend, you see the Atlanta Braves take the first two Friday and Saturday, and yet yesterday, as I'm sitting here in the postgame, their offense comes up short once again, and it's frustrating.
Starting pitching, too, with Charlie Morton. Good Lord.
It kind of occurred to me yesterday in the postgame, and I'm sitting there kind of watching everything that's going on. All the expectations in the world of what this Atlanta Falcons offense can and will be, and yet they just continue to struggle to get touchdowns. And on the flip side, and you've dealt with a number of injuries, but everything you thought the Braves would be in 2024, they have not been. And yet you continue to struggle hitting with runners in scoring position, even though you won Friday and Saturday, not getting anything done with runners in scoring position, and you're able to kind of press that way. But I suggest this question to you guys. As we move ahead to the next few days, which offense do you trust more? Is it the Atlanta Braves and all this crunch time situation with the entire season on the line? Or will it be the Falcons going into Thursday night against the Buccaneers with the division lead on the line? Rob, what say you? Which one do you feel better about?
I don't feel particularly great about either one.
I guess, is that a fair?
You know, it's kind of a push.
It's not fair or foul. It's fine.
maybe just by a tick, the Braves.
Yeah, why is that?
Well,
does that say more about the Braves or does it say more about the Falcons?
Probably just says more about the Falcons, perhaps.
Yeah,
if you ask
me.
But I mean, certainly this offense hasn't peaked for the Falcons. I mean, they're chipping away at it, trying to figure something out. Certainly, you got a first year offensive coordinator, first year head coach, first year quarterback. I mean,
well, that's why
you're still 2-2.
That's why I think it's the Falcons, because I've seen what the Braves are. I have got more than a sample size. I've got 160 games of just whatever this is, and it's not of inconsistency, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yep.
And the Falcons have shown these glimmers. Darnell Mooney and Kirk Cousins are still starting to take off. Drake London, I think, is turning into just that. I mean, every catch he makes is contested, and it is phenomenal with some of the catches. The biggest bugaboo for me right now is I've got a tight end who wears number 8, and he plays like he's Darnell Mooney's size.
I can't disagree with you, man.
And I'm getting kind of sick of watching it, and I cannot go to bat for him any longer.
Lack of urgency, lack of aggressiveness.
There's no sense of urgency or aggression.
Lack of gaffe. Is what I would call it. Lack of gaff, GAF.
And I'm no one's a bigger fan of the tight end than me.
Yeah, no, and we all expect that. You and I sat there and talked to him. We expect him to have a massive year. And I don't think it's that they're not trying to get him the ball. Let me ask you this question about Kyle Pitts before I even move on. Let me ask you this question. The Kyle Pitts thing, the whole narrative about where are his catches, where is his touches, where is his points, is that not to y'all more of a national narrative? I don't think the Falcons fan base are really the ones asking that question, because the Falcons fan base, in my opinion, is saying, I don't care what it takes, let's just win. It seems like people outside of the city and outside of the organization are the ones going, where is Kyle Pitts?
I don't wholeheartedly agree with that. I think there is an extent of that, because everything is fantasy football place, and you have people who claim to be analysts, and then they want to
come. Analysts?
Oh. Yeah, then they want to comment like they're a fantasy football owner. But the problem for me is You know, I brought up the tight end right after Drake London because Drake London is making the catches that I need the tight end to make.
Contested. Rangy.
Yeah.
Physical.
There's a route where...
And he's blocking better.
There's a route where... Yeah, he is. Now, there are also different assignments sure. Who they're blocking. But there's a route where the tight end turns and doesn't basically... His route is sloppy.
Yeah,
okay?
He rounds
at the top of it. And he's got to round it off with some aggression, some power, some physicality. And he doesn't, so he gets ran through by a defensive back. A tight end should not get run through by a defensive back.
I think a lot of people want them to force feed Kyle Pitts, and let's flip that back over to the Braves. Do you think that they're putting too much on Ozzie Albies hitting in the lineup at the number two spot right now? What does he go, 0 for 5, 0 for 6 yesterday? Can't get anybody moved over. He's hitting from only the right side. I think they're putting too much on his shoulders and trying to force him into a situation, much like I think that some people want Kyle Pitts to do. It's kind of interesting to see the way they've utilized Ozzie Albies. I think they're asking too much of him too soon, and I think they need to kind of take something off of him. If he's going to hit from the right side, he's not going to be as clutch.
No, I disagree. I think he's a great hitter from the right side. I think I like him better, honestly, from the right side. I understand I completely disagree. Ozzie Albies is a leader on this baseball team. He's one of the young guys that came up that you couldn't do without. That's why you even moved him from short to second, so he was on the field immediately when him and Dansby were up here. It's time to lead then. This is crunch time.
If you feel that way, he better lead with that bat soon.
Good approaches to the plate, little patience, get a good pitch to hit. Don't try to do too much. That's all it is.
There you go.
You got to calm your brain down is all you got to do.
Thanks for playing, guys. That's mic'd up.
Well, don't you love where they throw to Darnell Mooney on that last drive and Paulson Adebo just tackles him and then starts celebrating like he didn't do anything wrong. Clown.
Just such a blatant pass interference to the tune of
he's a pretty
32
good player.
Yards. Yeah?
For the most part, Adebo's not a bad player.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. You heard Mike bring up the notion, whose offense do you trust more, Braves or Falcons? What can the Falcons do to get to the next level of this offense? They're kind of sputtering about, but you're still 2-2. Tampa Bay coming in Thursday night at 3-1.
It's
Morning
up.
Shift Sports Radio, 1990 Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 1990 Game. Triple N for Tiffany. Falcons getting ready for Tampa Bay Thursday night here. 8:15 kickoff right here on Sports Radio, 1990 Game. We're going to be talking with David Archer, Falcons color analyst, coming up at 8:20. But Mike, Squid, what can this offense do to get on track? It's just kind of sputtering about, trying to figure things out, frustrating to watch. Due to a myriad of reasons.
I got three simple fixes for Falcons offense. A, win on first down.
Yep.
They're not doing it enough. They're not getting enough positive plays on first down. B, be better on third down. And it goes hand in hand with one or B or A or B or whatever you want to call it. Because if you have positive, that's why the Saints were so good at moving the ball and able to run the ball so effectively. They were getting such good gains on first down. And the other one is stop shooting yourself in the foot. The mistimed, ill-timed, however you want to phrase it, penalties on this offense. You have a touchdown to Bijan Robinson, a screen where you open it up perfect and Bijan works his magic that only he can, the way he has the vision and the speed and his agility, and you score, and then it comes back for what I thought was a BS ticky-tack penalty.
Yep.
But the reality of the situation is these ill-timed penalties are killing this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easier said than done. I don't think there's a team in America that doesn't want to be better on third down or have more success when it comes to first and second down. The question is, how do you do it? And I think a great kind of blueprint to kind of showcase how you could possibly do that is to look exactly what Clint Kubiak and New Orleans are doing. The amount of eye candy and the amount of times you can freeze linebackers and guys on the edge and everything else, they utilize at an incredible level. I mean, you put Taysom Hill at quarterback and use different options, right, to be able to have some imagination in terms of what you do. We are so freaking vanilla to the point where the only run plays we ran were wide zone and a couple of inside zones. That is it. We don't have gap schemes. We don't pull guards to the outside, to the inside, across the formation. We don't do any of it. And you look at the Saints, and they do all of it, it seems like, at a high level with their offensive line. That's how you keep defenses off balance. So to add to Squid's points, how do you do it? He says, you know, you're better on first and second down, better on third down. Yeah, I think you have to do it with more imagination in your play calling and your schemes and in order to put your guys in the best possible situation.
Well, they need to man up like we need to man up.
Why am I the only one with a voice in there about saying I was wrong?
Well, you're usually the only one that has to really man up in a rough way.
Not really. I went 2-2. I mean, I was 500.
That's all right.
I mean, I didn't lose
we'll
you no money.
Happens. We'll see what happens.
Well, what was your bad one?
My bad one is not even a bad pick. It was just a bad beat. Vegas lost to an inept Carolina team the 2 weeks before. Some say it's a different team. Some say it's a good team. I don't know. All I know is Vegas looked a lot better when they played the Ravens. I am confused and baffled at the fact that they're a two-point favorite. However, the thing that confuses me more is the fact that this over-under is at 36.5. I go with the over. It's going to be something around 24-20. There's going to be 40 points scored at least. Take the over in the Vegas Browns game in Vegas.
Wow.
Take the over, baby. Wow. It's 36.5. Tell them Squid Billy sent you.
Close, but no cigar.
I mean, I was literally one, what? I was very close.
Yeah, you were really, really close.
Half a point, and that's because another BS penalty pulled off that touchdown for the. And I don't know.
You said you went 2-2. What was your loss?
That one. I lost the Georgia game.
Yeah.
Because I thought Kirby Smart was going to have a game plan and not show up empty handed. Kind of like
rough.
His team left.
I disagree, but nonetheless, my bad one, because I went 3-1, and it was an unfortunate bad one, because really, there's an interception at the end of the game. I had the Auburn-Oklahoma game, the under, and let's talk about it. I'm actually just going to go with the under in this one. I've got it at 45 right now. I think Oklahoma's defense under Brent Venables is next level. I don't think Auburn's offense can really hold up in that situation, but Oklahoma's offense is not very good either. They had to make a switch at quarterback. There's a lot of other questions about that. Give me the under in Auburn-Oklahoma under 45. That is going to be a good one. Let me tell you.
That's the wrong number.
Let me just tell you guys how comfortable I felt about this one. Oklahoma scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to win this game, and the last touchdown was on an interception return with 4 minutes left.
Hey,
should have hit it. Did not.
Poor Auburn. Poor Peyton Thorne. I mean, he's benched for interceptions. Comes in. They're winning the game. He's just got to protect the ball and throws a pick six to lose it.
Yeah. Auburn, 338 passing yards. Hats off to him.
Well, I know this boy named Rob Tribble. I wish I could go back and talk to him on Friday. Talk some sense into him. 19th ranked Illinois, the Fighting Illini at the Fighting Mike Contis of Penn State. Illinois with the upset. Illinois wins this one 30-27.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
You really bought into the Brett Bielema juice, didn't you?
And Mike was with me, too.
You
with me.
Oh,
Brett
man.
Brett Bielema, I'm going to tell you something. I remember the Brett Bielema that we knew at Wisconsin, you know, the guy that would, from what I've heard, would pony up to the bar after a game.
Dude.
And would hang out with whoever would. Boy, he goes to Vegas, meets his wife, and now he looks like three of a Brett Bielema from Wisconsin.
I got to tell you, I love the first part of that story before we get to the good ones. I went to a coaching clinic in San Antonio like 2 years ago when I was coaching high school ball. And I get in the airport. I think I was in Houston for my connection. And I walk, and I'm trying to find a bar and a beer. And I walk into an empty bar, only one man sitting in this bar in this airport in Houston. It was Brett Bielema. I was like, yes! Yes!
What's up, coach?
Oh, man, he had a couple of guys that sat around him and started talking to him. He's like, I'm not going to bother him, but I just love the fact that I have this visual for the rest of my life of Brett Bielema sitting there with a cold beer in the Houston airport, man. Yeah, good for him.
I mean, it's his stories at Wisconsin are legendary.
All right, we've torn ourselves down. Now let's build ourselves up. What was your good one there, Mike?
I went with San Fran at New England. Let's hear what I had to say. 49ers are 10-point favorites on the road against New England. I'm going with San Francisco.
Oh.
Why on earth is San Francisco a 10-point favorite? Because they're that much better than New England is. Look at New England's offense. Inept. Just could not do anything last week. I'm going to go San Francisco to cover that 10 right there. I think they win by a couple of touchdowns, if not more. I think this is a lopsided game.
Come on, man. That's too easy.
It is too easy. San Fran wins by, I think, 20 points, maybe 17. I think there was a last-minute field goal for New England. The final's 30-13. So there you go, man. Felt good about San Fran. They're just so much better. New England is terrible right now. Terrible.
Yeah, I think they're about to make that old switch. I think Jacoby Brissett's starting quarterback era in New England is kind of run out. Look, my good was me basically telling you that I know more than Mike. I have no clue why this game is even. None. I'm baffled. I know that Oklahoma's starting a new quarterback, but they are a better roster, and I think they're better coached right now than Auburn. I'm going to pick Oklahoma straight up in this game.
This mother don't miss.
No, he's good.
That mother don't miss, man.
You're right, Snoop Dogg. I don't miss.
You got so freaking lucky.
I told you the better team would win.
I mean, dude, there's literally videos of Auburn fans rolling Toomer's corner with 4 minutes left, and they get the pick six for Oklahoma. Oklahoma got the crap beat out of them in this game and somehow won. I still don't know how they won this game.
Can I tell you real quick? So I was out Saturday having beers with this guy used to play offensive line in the NFL, and we had to stop by Kroger on the way home, Amy and I. And so I get home, and then we go over to the neighbor's house to watch the Alabama game, and I go downstairs to eat by myself. He's downstairs. I'm just sitting there by myself eating, and he's got all the four screens up, and I see the pick six, and I'm like, yes! Go! Go! Yes! I'm so pumped.
Oh, man.
Rob, what was your good?
Well, let's hear it. 111th meeting between the Falcons and Saints. Both teams have won 55. Taysom Hill is playing. He might do something to annoy the fan base and strike fear in our hearts. Falcons, emotional victory.
Let's go.
Over the Saints. They're going to win this one 23-21.
Woo!
And the tubas will be quiet at the Hoodat Nation tubas.
Woo!
And we're going to celebrate. Come by the Signia by Hilton and buy me a shot.
Did snap spot. Kick from Koo is away, and it is good! 58, and the money shot for Youngway Koo.
The money
Not
shot.
Not the money shot.
I mean,
yes.
They have the booth cam set up, and the video's out. Wes might have dropped the money shot and was excited, but... I couldn't sit down for it. The cams called Art and me both fist pumping. We're pumped.
As you should, man. As you should.
That's good stuff, man. Nice work. Nice work, everybody.
Well,
nice
David work. Archer had a pretty fun, exhilarating work weekend. He did the call for Alabama, Georgia, and got to witness that Falcons victory yesterday. We're going to discuss both of those things with him and dissect this Falcons victory as they get ready to host the 3-1 Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Thursday night, 8:15 kickoff at home, right here, Sports Radio 929 Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany this hour, brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Let's go out and talk to Falcons analyst, former Falcons quarterback, David Archer. Arch, you had a pretty exhilarating broadcasting weekend. You were in Tuscaloosa for the instant classic that was Georgia-Alabama, and of course the victory yesterday, warts and all, Falcons over the Saints. Tell me about Saturday.
Yeah, it was an incredible scene, Rob, over there. Bryant-Denny Stadium, as you can imagine, is a pretty good place to go do a game anyway. But with Georgia in town and the Georgia fans that were able to find tickets to get in there, it just made it an unbelievable theater. These stadiums that are in the SEC are essentially cathedrals to college football, and it was an unbelievable scene. It's fun to be a part of those kind of scenarios. And then what played out on Saturday night, with what looked like was going to be a total devastation, destruction job by Alabama and then Georgia, for them to be able to flip the script and come back. It just, like you said, instant classic. I think you could see these two teams play each other two more times.
Arch, while we're on that, let's follow up with, it looked like the tale of two halves, obviously, for Carson Beck. As I thought after the second possession where the audibles to Arian, the screenplay, and Arian Smith doesn't get the call, he looked shook for a little bit, and then the second half comes out, and I thought he played really well in the second half. And then Jalen Milroe just looked like the best quarterback in college football on Saturday night.
Well, Jalen Milroe was certainly the best football player on the field on Saturday night. There's no question about that. He was playing at a completely different speed than anybody else, and those are two rosters that are littered with guys that are going to play in the National Football League, and he was easily the best player there. His physicality and the speed he played at physically was completely different than a different speed than anybody else playing on the Georgia defense, certainly. And his processing was phenomenal as well. He did some really good things just to play quarterback in the game that was even faster than anybody was making decisions as well. So that was really fascinating to see how much he's developed since early of last season to where he is now. I thought that was, to me, it was a Heisman moment. You know, you got to continue to make those things happen throughout the year. But to me, that would shove him right into the top of the heap to be able to play the way he did against Georgia. And then I just thought the resilience of Georgia to hang in there. I thought that Mike Bobo had some very interesting moments from a play calling standpoint, especially at the end of the first half. I thought they put themselves potentially in a chance to have a chance to get blown out of the game. The defense held on the rope a little bit at the end of the half to keep them in it. And then Beck decided, you know what, I'm just going to put my receivers up to bat. I'm going to go one-on-one and take shots down the field. And their guys stepped up and made plays, and it just shows you the heart of a champion as they fought back into the game to have a chance to win it. And then you get that 17-year-old, the brilliance of that 17-year-old wide receiver, Ryan Williams, was phenomenal. So it was an incredible game, no question.
Yeah, it was definitely unbelievable. I mean, the grittiness of Carson Beck on some of those fourth down conversions, like something I've never seen. I thought that was actually one of the stories of the game. Arch, I want to pivot to obviously Mercedes-Benz Stadium yesterday and talk about this Falcons team. And I do think there are questions obviously still out there about what this team is offensively, but let's focus on the good for just one second. I thought the offensive line played pretty well, all things considered. And I think the secondary for this Falcons team right now, probably the best unit on the field, the way they play in the back end. They're just incredible the way they're playing.
Mike, there's just so many untimely things that are happening to this team, whether it's a drop pass, whether it's a missed block potentially, whether it's a tight end or an offensive line misses a block, or Kirk just doesn't read it right and throws it to the wrong place. But those are the things that are kind of stunting what's going on offensively. But I would agree with you. I think that there's a lot of things that you like. I think there's even with the two guys that were starting with Neusel and Storm Norton starting at offensive center and right tackle, I thought you had some really good, pretty good continuity up front. I thought you got the ground game going, certainly when Tyler Algier got in the game. I thought they had a really pretty good job of protecting Kirk, giving him an opportunity to get through his progressions and go from one to two to three. And I think that there's a developing chemistry that's starting to happen. I talked a little bit about it, Kirk, and I think you guys played the interview I had with Kirk after the game, that he's got going on with Mooney and with London and with Ray McLeod. Now, you'd like to see it develop even further with Kyle Pitts, but I just see there's a trust thing there that's developing, that he's getting the ball out on time. Those guys are making some plays for him. They're not making enough of those plays, but certainly those are things that I think you hang your hat on. The defensive side of the ball, you got to find a way to get off the field on third down. Their first down defense is interesting because they're giving up a lot of yardage on first down, and teams are staying in a very manageable situations, but they're just kind of bending, and they're not really breaking down. And then at some point, somebody makes a play. And the back end, you talk about a group that I thought there was a couple of moments during the game where they didn't tackle very well. But I thought in the second half, they tackled extremely well. And Mike Hughes is unbelievable at the corner. He's not a very big guy, but the dude can tackle. You know, A.J. Terrell's going to come up and try to hit you, and those two safeties are pretty solid as well. And of course, Troy Anderson had a monster day. 16 tackles, interception return for a touchdown. That's his best game as a football, as an NFL player, and you just hope that that's the tip of the iceberg for him.
Arch, I just want to follow up real quick, too, and a lot of conversation about Tyler Algier. You mentioned the physicality. I think the splits right now have kind of been 70-30, 75-25. What is the right amount of splits in terms of carries for both these running backs? Because I both think they're dynamic in their own right, but I think Algier brings a little bit of physicality.
Well, I think that, Mike, it's one of those deals where you got two really good players that you almost have to ride the hot hand, don't you? I think it's one of those deals where I don't think you could predicate, okay, you know, Bijan's going to touch the ball 60% of the time and Tyler's going to get 40%. I think you're doing yourself a disservice. If you've got a guy, and they did it yesterday, Tyler got hot, and they were running the football downhill, and they were being physical, they kept him in the game. You know, and you got one of your best football players in Bijan Robinson, the most explosive players on your team, standing on the sidelines watching. But that's what the situation, you know, really kind of dictated. And so I think that's the way you got to ride it. I think you got to ride the hot hand.
What's going right with Tampa Bay? Certainly Baker's playing out of his mind.
Yeah, they're doing. He's the key to it. Obviously, they're doing a really good job because they're not doing a lot of great stuff on the defensive side. But they're not necessarily sacking the quarterback a ton or anything like that. When I look at some of the numbers, Rob, I think that Baker's not missing He's doing a really good job of getting the ball down the field. They're not running the football with any significance. It's always a team. It's team. You kind of scratch your head. It's not an offensive line that likes to come off and ball or run the football. They're getting enough out of the running game to kind of mix it up. I just think that they're playing at a really efficient level. They're not making some of the mistakes Atlanta's making, where you're getting a critical penalty that takes a touchdown off the board, or you get a big completion on a first down and get hands to the face, or you rip a guy's helmet off and you get a 15-yard penalty that takes that play away. They're not doing those kind of things to themselves. They're possessing the ball at about 30, 31 minutes per game. Mm. You know, and that's where Atlanta's – you're going to get in trouble if you get a really good offensive unit. And they've played some good teams so far, Rob, this season. But I don't know if they've played anybody dynamic on offense. And I know that's including Kansas City. And then it was this team this weekend. It was supposed to be pretty good offensively. I didn't see anything there that would just scare you to death. This might be the best offensive team from an efficiency standpoint and operation standpoint early in the year they've played.
Baker thrives in chaos, doesn't he, when the play breaks down?
Well, he does a good job of creating some things. I don't know that he's necessarily any better than anybody you've seen from a creation standpoint or moving in the pocket. I mean, nobody's better than Patrick Mahomes
right. At
keeping things alive. I think what Baker's developed into is a guy that has an understanding of when to take shots down the field. He's got a couple of guys that'll go get the rock for him, and he understands how to distribute the ball underneath. And that's the real question here is what does Atlanta stay with what they're doing defensively and know that they're going to lose the time of possession game? As long as the offense scoring, I guess you can do that. Or do you start to get more aggressive and get after people? Because those first down plays, that's at some point you got to figure that that's going to be a bit of a problem to be on the field 35 minutes on defense.
Well, let's talk about that. They ran for 100 yards in the first half yesterday. Now, you did a good job in the second half at limiting that. But why are teams able to run with such great success? I was very impressed with what we did in the offseason to make this defensive line better, but it doesn't feel like it showed up yet in the run game.
Well, the run game's about numbers, Bo, in my opinion, and you don't have the numbers to consistently stop the run game. You're playing too high safeties most of the game, so you're playing an umbrella coverage. And this weekend kind of dictated that because you didn't want Rashid Shaheed to get over the top or Chris Olave. They had come into the game making big plays down the field. Now, it wasn't just this game. That's kind of the way this defense is designed. You're playing cover four. You're playing some cover two. And so those two safeties are going to be off the ball 15, 18 yards off the ball. They can't really be involved in the run game unless you start trying to cheat a little bit. They're also playing five across the front. They're going to a bear look on the inside. They're playing five across the front. They've got two guys at that second level. And if Caden Ellis and Troy Anderson don't read things right and fit the run properly, then you're getting gashed in the run game. And I think there's still some development going on there.
Hey, I know you touched on the secondary. And I think I said it this morning that this defense is just basically said, we're going to give you to the 10-yard line and then we're gonna clamp down. But I think the play that no one's talking about was D. Alford's play on Rashid Shaheed yesterday in the end zone on that fourth down play. And I know you talked to D. Alford after the game, and he kind of talked about what happened there.
Yeah, the communication that they've got going on, and it goes to what Mike's talking about too, is the development of the communication in the back end. You got a bunch of guys that are kind of learning to play together each other. You know, Mike Hughes played some corner last year, played some nickel last year. D's certainly been in that position for a while. Jesse was in the back end, but you got a new safety in Justin Simmons. And I think that those elements of being able to communicate with one another in real time, because you're talking about when a team breaks the huddle or is at the line of scrimmage, you've got a couple of seconds to kind of figure out, okay, we got a stack look here. Are we going to play this? We got them in man coverage. I'll take inside, you take outside. No, let's just lock it. That was the conversation that was going on, and that's what they decided to do, is just lock it, meaning they're going to take the guy they originally had in the look. And D does a really good job of staying in the hip pocket of Shaheed when he runs that little bench route in the end zone and is able to knock the ball away and get him off the field. So I just think there's a continued development there, but it gets restricted down there in the end zone, down near the end zone, and Atlanta's been really good in the red zone.
Troy Anderson, great to see him kind of come into his own yesterday. We know why he was drafted, that freakish athleticism for his size. His development got sidelined last year due to injury. What's the latest on him yesterday with that knee?
Saw him a little bit after the game, Rob. He seemed to be moving around okay. I mean, obviously it's going to be a scenario where they're going to have to look at him today and tomorrow. We'll find out, you know, the official report will come out on Wednesday. I don't know that I can give you a solid report. I just know that he was moving around okay. It wasn't like he was in a boot or didn't have a brace on his knee or anything like that post-game. So we just got to keep our fingers crossed that this doesn't sideline him for any time, because Nate Landman is not due to come back for a while. They're a little thin at the linebacker spot. You know, J.D. Bertrand is that next guy up, and I thought J.D. got fooled a little bit a couple of times when he was in the game. So you're going to lose some of the experience that, even though a young player like Troy Anderson, he's garnered some experience, so you lose a little bit there. So hopefully the big guy from Montana can be ready to roll.
All right, Arch, we appreciate you, my brother. Let's go get a win on Thursday.
Sir. Let's go.
Let's do it, baby. Let's go. Thanks, man.
All right. What you got, Squid?
Tom Brady, in the broadcast yesterday, revealed that there was a mystery team none of us knew about that almost snagged him when he was a free agent before he went to Tampa Bay.
Ooh, I know, but I won't say anything.
You pipe down.
Ooh, me too.
All next on the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
That's right. We had a big series with the Mets. Hurricane wipes it out. We win one game in it. Then you take two or three from the Royals, who are a playoff team, by the way.
Ding.
Georgia-Alabama in what became an instant classic, the tale of two halves.
Might end up being the game of the year, honestly, college football.
Where you had nothing but stars either make their presence known or created. I thought Jalen Milroe made his presence known, that he was still that, you know, he's even better than he was last year. I think Ryan Williams probably said, hey, here I am. I am on the national scene. And he does an ode to the program with the eye black that says "kill everybody," which is
he also did the Dirty Bird. So
he did.
That's right, he did.
And then you have Falcons Saints, which no matter how you, I think we've talked about it pretty. We've been pretty even keel about the victory, but the reality is you just beat your arch rival to take the series lead. And you did it in a huge division game. You knocked them. You handed them their second straight loss.
A vital division game yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday was vital.
You're going to have another division rival coming in Thursday. Oh, hey, we got a doubleheader today that decides the fate of the franchise that's been the best the last 5 years, has a world championship, huge expectations, and a season that basically has been devastated by injuries, and a lot of fans that are going to get receipts if they win one of two today from me gave up on. And here you are, you could have a playoff game tomorrow night, and I think Wednesday. I'm not sure if they get a day off in between Tuesday and Wednesday, but essentially you've been playing playoff games with the Braves for the last 2 weeks, and the Falcons have one of the biggest division games that they'll have all year on Thursday night.
Yeah, can't go without saying the three primetime games in a matter of 5 weeks for the Falcons is such a flip and reverse from what we played through last year, where every single game was on Sunday at 1 o'clock, side for the game in Arizona, which was 4 o'clock, but local time 1 o'clock.
So, yeah, I'll be doing Falcons flyover at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
1 a.m.
Well,
can you do me a favor? Can you be quiet when you walk in? Because I'll be sleeping in my office.
I'm over in Abe's office, knocked out. Rob's like, boom! Door slams behind him. I'm like, what time is it? Oh, it's 2:30. Oh, my God. Still got 2 hours of sleep in here. So, yeah,
all right.
Be careful with that door.